Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Vice's Shane Smith, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. Then go behind the scenes of the show in the exclusive late night chat segment. But first, let's hear a closer look.
Today, Republicans, led by President Trump and House Speaker Paul Ryan, rushed a bill through the House of Representatives that would strip health insurance away from millions of people before most Americans and even many members of Congress knew what was in the bill. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. In the run-up to today's vote, Trump spent the week continuing a habit of his from the campaign, making absurd promises about his deal-making skills that have no basis in reality. Yesterday, for example, he claimed that he might be able to solve the most intractable conflict in the world, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Let's see if we can find a solution. It's a something that I think is, frankly, maybe not as difficult as people have thought over the years.
Maybe not as difficult as people have thought. Peace in the Middle East is the phrase people use to describe something that's difficult. That's like saying, when I need a needle, I just go straight to the haystack and grab one. Boom, easy as that. Trump's claims about Middle East peace are a lot like his claims about what his healthcare plan would actually do. Naive, overconfident, and detached from reality. And now we're also getting a glimpse of how Trump's White House will square the promises he made about healthcare with the reality of this bill. They'll just lie. Just take an example, the border wall. Trump has not gotten any money for his wall, so yesterday, Press Secretary Sean Spicer argued that fencing was just as good as the wall Trump promised, and reporters were not having it.
We have a porous border right now with broken fences, things that can be cut through, and to replace this with 20-foot-high Ballard wall will protect our country.
Are those photos of fences or walls?
That is called a Ballard wall. That is called a levee wall.
So that's the wall that...
No. There are various types of walls that can be built.
So that's not a wall. It's a levee wall?
That's what it's actually called. That's the name of it. That's what it is.
But it's not the wall the president promised.
That is, no, hold on.
Basically just telling supporters, the president's supporters, to be satisfied with this existing tough guy fencing until he's ready to build the wall.
I love that reporters are now just fully with Sean Spicer. Hey, Sean! Sean, the president promised a wall, and I don't know, bro, it kind of looks like a fence to me, right, everybody? No, it's a wall. It's a Ballard wall, you jerks. Did you just say, your balls were hard? No, I said Ballard. Of course, the deal Trump has been desperate to get done has been the Republican health care bill. And today, Republicans got one step closer to making it a reality by rushing a bill through the House. Now, if the American Health Care Act becomes law, Trump and the GOP will not be able to escape the negative consequences. They will own them. But I'm not sure Trump fully understands that. In an interview on Monday, He was asked about a famous quote from George W. Bush, who said that the reason the Oval Office is round is there are no corners you can hide in. Obviously, it's a metaphor about taking responsibility for your actions, yet Trump seemed to take it literally.
George W. Bush said the reason the Oval Office is round is there are no corners you can hide in.
Well, there's truth to that. There's truth to that. There are certainly no corners. And you look, there's a certain openness, but there's nobody out there. You know, there is an openness, but I've never seen anybody out there, actually, as you can imagine.
But what he meant was it all comes back to you.
Sure,
sure. Trump's like a guy who didn't get a joke. Take my wife, please. Okay, where is she? Also, I'd like to point out that the metaphor he didn't get was from George W. Bush. That's where we're at. The one thing George W. Bush never thought he'd do is go over someone's head. But in reality, Trump will not be able to hide from the ramifications of this bill, and those ramifications are disastrous. Remember, when Republicans first tried to pass this bill a few weeks ago, the Congressional Budget Office found that it would kick as many as 24 million Americans off of health insurance, raise premiums for older, poor Americans by more than 750%, cut federal Medicaid spending by $880 billion, and give the wealthiest people a giant tax cut of nearly $1 trillion over a decade. The bill literally takes from the poor and gives to the rich. It's exactly what Bernie Sanders warned us about. The only thing Bernie would hate more is a bill that bans free crackers at diners. I take them home, and I feed them to my birds. And then, on top of that, to get the bill passed today, Republicans added new things that made it even worse. They basically took an oatmeal raisin cookie and added cilantro. For example, the new version would allow states to waive out of Obamacare's ban on pre-existing conditions and essential benefits such as pregnancy, lab tests, emergency room trips, and ambulance trips. That's right. Republicans think your health insurance shouldn't have to cover ambulance trips. So if you're having a heart attack, don't call 911. Call 666-666-666. Remember 6. Can you remember that? Despite all that, Republicans hastily arranged a victory celebration at the White House today, and they were absolutely giddy. And Trump could not help but brag about the thing he always brags about, the fact that he won.
What we have is something very, very incredibly well-crafted. And, you know, coming from a different world and only being a politician for a short period of time, how am I doing? Am I doing okay? I'm president. Hey, I'm president. Can you believe it, right?
No. No, I can't. I cannot. Also, look how happy those old white guys are. I guess they're just happy they finally passed something that wasn't a kidney stone. No longer covered, by the way. But here's one of the most galling parts of the whole process. In 2010, when Democrats passed Obamacare, Republicans complained constantly about what they claimed was a rushed process that lacked public input. Back then, at least, Obamacare went through tons of hearings, took well over a year to become law. And what about this GOP bill? There have been no hearings, no studies, no Congressional Budget Office analysis, not even text of a bill circulated the day before the vote. In fact, some Republicans right now are just outright admitting that they did not read the bill that they voted on, a bill that would reorganize 1/6 of the American economy. Like Virginia Republican Tom Garrett, who said this on MSNBC Today.
Have you read the whole bill?
Oh, gosh. Let's put it this way. People in my office have read all the parts of the bill. I don't think any individual has read the whole bill, but that's why we have staff.
That's right. Your elected official didn't read the bill, but Jonah did. Even the basic question of how much the bill would cost has been a mystery to Republicans, like Texas Congressman Joe Barton, who said this last week.
Is this going to be a cheaper bill when everything is said, done, if it passes, or a more expensive bill than Obamacare?
Well, that's a very good question. The honest answer, Greta, is that nobody really knows.
And when it comes to health care, I think all Americans want the comfort of not knowing. Am I covered for this life-saving procedure? Why don't we do the operation now, and we'll tell you tomorrow? Ooh, that sounds fun. So Americans and members of Congress haven't even read this bill. And the Congressional Budget Office has not told us how much it costs. I just wish someone would have the courage to come out against such a secretive process. I wish someone would just tell Paul Ryan that we shouldn't pass bills we haven't read and don't know what they cost.
I don't think we should pass bills that we haven't read that we don't know what they cost.
Thank you, Paul Ryan. That was Paul Ryan in 2009 when Obamacare was making its way through Congress. And you'll never guess how much of what Ryan claimed to hate back then he's totally cool with today.
If you rush this thing through before anybody even knows what it is, that's not good democracy. That's not doing our work for our constituents. Speaker Pelosi is trying to jam her bill through as fast as possible. I think this is less about health care policy and more about ideology. This is not bipartisan. For bipartisanship to work, the majority has to be willing to collaborate with minority. That has not occurred.
We are right here creating a legislative Trojan horse in which a handful of people, hidden from public view, will reshape how all Americans receive and pay for their health care.
And they're trying to muscle it through by the end of this week.
And when it comes to muscling, no one knows better than Paul Ryan. Look at that guy. He's in amazing shape. No wonder he's not worried about health care. His resting heart rate is he doesn't have one. Everything that Paul Ryan claimed to hate about the Obamacare process in 2009, he is doing now. Republicans are lying through their teeth about the impacts of the bill on premiums and pre-existing conditions and hoping no one will catch them because there's no CBO score. And until last night, there was no text. Americans are being conned, and there will be consequences for the people doing the conning. But don't take it from me. Take it from this guy.
What people are going to get is not what they think they're getting based upon the rhetoric that was used to sell this health care bill.
This is not about health care policy. If it were, we could pass a bipartisan bill to fix what's broken in health care without breaking what's working in health care. This is about ideology. My friends, the choice is not whether you're going to stick with your party leaders. The choice here is what side of history do you want to be on?
Yes, what's it going to be? Are you with Paul Ryan or are you with Paul Ryan? This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/Late Night Seth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest is the founder and CEO of Vice Media. He hosts the Emmy-winning news magazine series Vice, which airs Friday nights on HBO. Please welcome to the show, Shane Smith, everybody.
I'm very happy to be here.
You live one of the more exciting globetrotting lives of anyone I know. You recently posted this photo of you falconing.
Yeah.
Where are you falconing here?
In the desert.
In the desert in?
In Abu Dhabi.
In Abu Dhabi. So how...
There we go.
There we go. Some Abu Dhabi in the house. What happens to lead you into the middle of the desert to falconing?
Well, we're launching Vice in the Middle East, and... Somebody came to a party, and our launch party, and said, would you like to go falconing?
Your life rules.
So I said, sure, and so I went out, and we went out to the desert, and it was actually the royal family's falconing area.
Uh-huh, sure.
And so they give you a falcon, and it goes off, and it catches things and comes back. And
what is it? Does it bring you the thing it catches?
Yeah. So they're trained. They're like dogs. They train them. It's true. The falcon that I fell in love with, sat next, in the car, like a dog would, like. And so there's this falcon, and they literally can just, they go, and they open up the thing, and they go, and it shoots out the top of the car, and then it flies off, and it gets the bird or the rabbit or whatever, and then it comes back.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you're going to get into it full time?
Yeah, I want one.
Yeah, exactly. What was your falcon's name? Did it have a name?
They had long names, but they're in Arabic, so
no, there you go.
I'm not going to try.
You'll just call him Jack.
Yeah. Cutie Pie.
Cutie Pie, that's a good one.
Lovey Lovey.
Right. That's that Lovey Lovey's a really mean name for whatever bird it's killing and bringing back.
Yeah.
Oh, no, here comes Lovey Lovey.
Yeah.
You've been to North Korea twice, correct?
Yeah.
You've reported from inside North Korea?
Yeah.
What is it like to be there?
Are you familiar with acid?
A little.
It's like being on acid. It's a combination of going back in time to sort of Stalinist Russia or Maoist China, sort of cult of personality, you know, utopian society, and just bull goose lunacy, like just sheer craziness.
And how do, I mean, are you sort of, how low a profile do you have to keep when you're there?
The first time I was there, I had to keep, we were shooting on cyber shots, like on a point and shoot, little cameras.
Uh-huh.
And because we weren't allowed to shoot, so we were like, oh, I'm just going to take a picture. And when we left, they opened the camera and they said, why do you have a 5 gig card instead of a 38 meg card, which is the standard issue for, and we're like, oh God, we're caught. But before we left, we had met these generals in the only hotel, which actually had a casino, and we got drunk on blueberry wine, and they said,
yeah.
And they said, you can come back, and because they invited us back, we got to shoot the Arirang Games, which are the 150,000 people in the largest stadium in the world, and they're like, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's like human pixels, you know, they have, and they do the whole history of Korea. Like,
oh, right, so they're holding up signs, yeah.
Yeah, so there's 150,000 people doing their tuk, 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 and there's just you.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Just pouring down blueberry wine and watching the show.
Yeah.
And you were instrumental in bringing Dennis Rodman to North Korea.
Yeah, so they have the Hall of Treasures,
uh-huh,
which is underneath a mountain, and they have all the treasures that were given to Kim Il-sung over his lifetime. So they have a train, like 20 stories down in the mountain, that Stalin gave him, and like a car that Mao gave him and stuff. And prominently placed is a basketball signed by Michael Jordan. And basketball is the biggest sport in North Korea. You wouldn't have thought that, but it is. And they love the Bulls. So we... because of the magic basketball in the Hall of Treasures. And so I was like, okay, we'll just call the Bulls and we'll go over. And and so, surprisingly enough, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen didn't want to go.
They didn't want to go to North Korea, yeah.
But...
you said, are you familiar with acid? And they hung up.
Correct, yeah. And so... Dennis Rodman said, sure.
He strikes me as the bull that would say yes.
He's up for anything.
Yeah, sure.
And so he said yes, and we got the Harlem Globetrotters, and they went over, and they played a game, and Kim Jong-un showed up. And then we stayed and shot a documentary for the next week. You know, we actually shot a documentary showing a side of North Korea that nobody sees. And we were actually just there. We were just there 2 weeks ago when they were sort of announcing the new rockets.
Wow, so you now have enough of a relationship that you can get over there and you bring Dennis Rodman to a party
there
and all of a sudden the door's open.
You're in.
So I want to ask about this because you have a couple shows. You have a weekly Vice show and you have a daily Vice show.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's this idea about millennial audiences that they like things in very small pieces and they have a very short attention span. But you have found with your programming this very... popular with that demographic, that's not the case, that they actually do have the time if you're telling a story that's interesting enough.
Yeah, we actually started Vice News on YouTube, and they told us, look, young people don't care about news. They especially don't care about international news. It has to be short and it has to be snackable. And so we said, great. And so we made long documentaries about North Korea and sort of West Africa, and we had the highest engagement time on all of YouTube. So people were watching it for, like, you know, 24 minutes at a time. And generally, they were doing 2 minutes. So then when we ported it over to HBO, everyone said, look, young people don't care about news, and they especially don't care about international news, and they really, you know, it has to be short form. So we do long-form documentary, and it's doing great.
Yeah, and not just here. Is it 80 countries now? Is that where you're setting up? Or are you...
So we're in... Vice is now in 80 countries.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's too many.
Yeah, well, there's more to go.
You get to go falconing. You know,
yeah, you get to
do
falconing.
Lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, again, like I said, your life is a lot cooler than mine. Yeah, I've never been at a party where North Korean generals have said, you want some blueberry wine, and the next thing I know, I'm in a stadium. So, yeah, I'm pretty jealous.
Right.
But thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks,
I really appreciate
it.
Shane Smith, everybody. Vice airs Friday nights on HBO.
This is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Shane Smith of Vice. You were just talking about all the different stories you've covered for Vice. You also interviewed President Obama a few times. Mm-hmm. I feel like President Obama has a thing where he would make fun of media organizations sometimes, especially like new media. Did you find that to be the case when you were talking to him?
Yeah, we talked a lot about media. I think the first time I interviewed him was not a success because it was sort of really stage managed. And we were trying to come up with something freaky, and so we went to this old bar, and they were I think they were worried. you know, what was going to happen, and we're Vice, whatever. So they did it in such a way that we had to do a roundtable first with these students, and then we sort of did the interview, and that was only, you know, 15 minutes, and, you know, couldn't really get into stuff. And so at the end, I said, look, you know, in, not to, you know, not that I have anything to say, but, you know, old media is going to do this to you. New media, we're free-flowing, it's new, and we like you, and, you know, we can do crazy stuff. And so not to take total credit, because I had a whole team, but after that, he started doing a lot of new media stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you saw, like, him, you know, riding a unicorn with a rainbow coming out its ass, you know. And so all of a sudden, he trusted us more. And so he came and he said, you know, I'm really passionate about the criminal justice system and reforming it, and what should we do? And so we said we should go to a prison, and that was a big thing. Cause
fantastic piece.
Well, the Department of Prisons wouldn't allow it, and so he had to sort of, DOP and DOJ, he had to sort of circumvent them.
Yeah.
And so, but it was, he was really passionate about it, and so he said, no, I'm going to go, and we're going to do it. So he was very open to suggestions after
sure.
the sort of miserable failure of my first interview.
Right. Let me ask about our current president. I feel like everybody is covering President Trump in a different way. Yeah. What is the Vice approach?
I think, you know, we saw the frenzy that led up to the election and then post-election scandal every day.
Yeah.
And we said, you know, the problem here is that you have the ex-CEO of Exxon, who's now Secretary of State. You have, you know, Pruitt, who tried to disband the EPA, sued it more times than anybody else, now running the EPA. Perry, who campaigned to disband the Department of Energy, now running the Department of Energy. So we were saying, well, what does the policy look like? You know, you've got 9 climate change deniers out of 10 in the cabinet. And what's the policy? You know, while all the tweets are happening and while all the, you know, furor around not going to the, you know, to press events or whatever, we're saying, well, they're changing things. They're changing things for civil rights, for LGBTQ rights, for the environment. Okay, well, what does it mean? So we're following that rather than the sort of crack of the headlines.
Yeah, well, it's important work. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Such a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you, brother.
Hi, I'm Manny Morales, and I do graphics and visual effects on Late Night.
Hello, I'm Tara Donnelly. I do graphics and things and design and kerning on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Oh, especially photoshopping.
And this is Late Night Chats with Manny and Tara.
Yes.
So Tara, what do you want to start with? What do you think is the most?
I was going to say about how we met.
That's good.
Oh man, my phone. Sorry, that was our stand-up app. This is a little secret to our work: is we actually sit at a computer all day doing graphics. So I have a beep on my phone every 25 minutes for us to stand up and stretch.
Yeah.
So you know, we don't want to hump back. We already have a humped back.
But I feel better having done it for like a few months now. Like
yes.
I actually feel like I'm working faster. I feel smarter.
It's also part of my science project.
What are you doing?
You're like my Pavlov's dog.
It just sounds like you're experimenting on me.
Exactly. but we met, we can say, right before the show started.
Right.
Because Manny, I was brought in for a few days for SNL, and then Late Night was starting up. And I was begging to work on this show because besides working on this show, I also work on SNL actually for 22 years, which is annoying because, you know, then you're going to see how old I am. No. And then so Manny came in and I actually begged Mike Shoemaker and Hillary Hahn to work on this show. And when they said yes, we needed another artist. And I kept thinking of like all these people. And then I was like, you know, that guy Manny, he's not so bad. And so Manny came in for an interview.
It's nice to hear all this now. I didn't know. I think you gave me a little bit of a hint, but I don't think I even heard that.
Well, just because the thing for me is I always want to work with someone who's the mindset the same as me, but the skills are the opposite of me. And what I say mindset is because you and I are kind of mellow as far as like we don't get tense, we don't freak out under pressure.
There's a lot, yeah. I
think we like go into a zone really quick and we know how to work fast, which is really important. Also, like, I could yell at you and it rolls off your back because I think we both come from big families and have a lot of siblings.
You've yelled a lot less lately, I have to say.
Like, yeah, I know.
Like, you definitely, whatever it was I was doing, it must have stopped.
Well, no, like, one day I wanted to throw something at you and then I was like, no, I did. That's like HR. I'm going to end up in HR if I throw something at you.
Okay. Nice to know. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind.
It's only because of the headphones that I want to throw things at you.
All right, we're not going to settle everything here now. but yeah, like, I remember also just when I first was working on, like, SNL, there was, like, I was actually expecting to be more freaked out by how everything was going. And I guess that's kind of like what you were talking about, is like, mm-hmm. handling pressure. Like, it was amazing to me, but I wasn't scared. Like, mm-hmm. I actually felt like excited, if mm-hmm. anything. And then, I don't know, maybe you just read that, because coming back in, like, on late night, I feel like we actually, maybe it got turned up a notch, just getting to 4 or 15.
Yeah.
Like, that sometimes can be even more intense. Like, I think maybe if there's anything that, like, freaked me out for the first time, it had to be one of those days where we had like 15 minutes and there's a whole ton of graphics that we're just starting.
Yeah. And I think the one thing I think, and this is just self-diagnosis, we also both think we have ADD. But then once we, like, focus, it's all that stuff's, like, going crazy in our brain and we're looking around and we're doing 50 things at once. But then when it comes down to the pressure, it's like a funnel. We both go zoom into that zone. And just through the years, I've worked with other people, you know, on other shows and, you know, other shows in the building and everything. And not everyone can handle that. It's not even just the pressure. It's being able to work really fast because, you know, like, we'll have the closer look or the monologue and, you know, the researchers have to get stuff for us, or, you know, you're getting info and research and we just have to do it really fast. There's the side of us, I think, as designers, we look at it later and we're like, oh, we could have done that so much better. But we had to do it in 10 minutes.
I actually really like watching you work under pressure, because every once in a while, like, something will get so intense and so tight that the whole room, there's really nothing else that can be done except you just have to Photoshop your, you know, the best that you can, as fast as you can, and we're all just silently watching you. There's like 7-8 people just holding their breath right behind you.
Yeah.
And you're just, and I sometimes I'm amazed that, like, you're doing that and you're not flinching at the fact that, like, every little click you're making, they're watching. And it's such a, like, intimate moment, but, like, there's a million people just staring at you.
And this you can relate to, too, is when you work faster than the computer.
Oh, right.
And so, like, you're being bogged down because the computer is not working as fast as your own brain.
Yeah, I definitely. Or one time, I think you remember the computer just shut down. We were trying to deliver your burn.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the computer just went off. Just went black.
Yeah.
It didn't make a sound. It just said, nope, not doing anything.
Yeah.
And it just began rebooting itself, and I was just, there's nothing you could do except wait for this thing to just come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's, you can't freak out.
No.
You can't freak out.
Not at all. The the only thing I was going to say was that, like, when you're saving it in, we when we do the graphics, we then have to send them to a control room, and the machine is called the Ross. Oh. And sometimes it will... Oh, named after you. And but sometimes it will take, you're all done and you're just waiting for it to copy in.
Yeah.
You're just like sweating. But the difference, and this is horrible to say, is that I have such good practice with SNL that sometimes, like this show, I'm like, yeah, it's on tape.
I mean, yeah, there's,
you know, it's,
kind of,
but it's like,
it's,
you know, it's like, I want to get it for rehearsal. I want to get it for the show taping. But sometimes I'm like, oh, this show's taped.
I think that's something a lot of people, like, I guess this is mentioned, maybe other people have probably said this, but yeah, like, you watch the show, at, you know, mm-hmm. after midnight, but we're really trying to get to 4:15. And that's like a whole different ballgame when you're still trying to keep up with current events and have it still be relevant that night. Like, we're doing Photoshops at the very, very, very last second.
Yeah. And the one thing, again, with when I look for other people to work with or who I want to work with, it's people who have an art background, like went to art school, know how to draw, know how to paint, know how to do all that. Because especially when you're doing Photoshops or even when you do visual effects, there is like a painting, drawing quality to it, even though you're working on a computer. You know, there's a lot of people now from when I first started till now, the programs have changed. It used to be a paint box, and that looked so mysterious to everyone, and everyone thought you were, like, you know, doing this, like, magic stuff. But when it turned over that we're working on a Mac and doing, you know, Photoshop, people are like, my mother knows Photoshop. And so then we lost a lot of cred.
Right.
But so I think... you know, the one thing is you can tell the difference when someone has an art training and they're using Photoshop and opposed to someone who's just, you know, doing it as a hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
there were a few quirks that you spanked me for in the very beginning.
Yeah. Then it's, yeah, no, I have like a, I'll say evil eye? No.
Evil?
I can just like certain things like bother me or give me a headache right away. Like if someone doesn't kern their type. And the good thing about Manny is, like, you tell him these little things or teach him something, he'll obsess over it.
Yeah.
And I do remember when I was teaching you more about proper kerning, proper letting, and also, like, true quotes, you know, like smart quotes. I remember you came in the next day, and you were like, oh, my God, I was on the subway, and all those posters are horrible. And I was like, see, I now scarred you for life.
Yeah, you cursed
but it's
me
like
with your
you
excellence.
Have to like get that eye, that sharp eye to see all that.
That's I'm willing to live with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I went to Rhode Island School of Design, and actually two guys in the band went to Rhode Island School of Design too. So there's three people who work on the show who went to Rhode Island School of Design.
Oh, that's too many. We got to get rid of some of you guys.
You went to school in Philadelphia.
You guys are going to join gang up against the UArts guys, no? But
yeah, he went to UArts.
But I guess like one of the questions you have is like, what is the easiest part? Like, I think it's the fact that we're laughing.
Well, no, the easiest part is that it's, you know, supposed to be fun.
Yeah,
because I've worked in news, and that's torture.
Yeah.
Not because the news is torture. I mean, sometimes it is. It's like, for some reason, there's like a much more serious vibe of everyone, and they take themselves very, very, very seriously. Mm. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, I'm just doing graphics for you, you know?
You know what I love is that, like, I'm reading the pull quotes. Like, that's whenever on a closer look, we have, like, an article, and then the text comes out. And so I've been assigned to this permanently now.
Yeah.
But this is, I'm now processing all these news bits.
Mm-hmm.
Through in the most humorous way you possibly could, like, and that's actually like, that's in a way that's a weird blessing, because it's like I want to keep up with things, but I think a lot of people today, like, they feel exhausted by it. But I don't know, it kind of like in a weird way like brightens my day, because, you know, I'm in the process of converting it into fun immediately, like from the beginning. I'm always like, and then you guys haven't even like read the articles yet, but I'm like, oh my God, wait till you read this. It's the most awful thing that we've ever heard of, and it's hilarious.
Well, the weird thing is that I somehow every night I do wake up like between 4 and 6, and I do like that because then I fall back asleep right away.
Mm.
I don't know why I wake up, but it's like around that time is when Sal sends a script. So then I'll like quickly skim it, so I'll know what like tomorrow is like, and I can. This is really stupid, but I can think about the Photoshops.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I have no life right now.
Yeah,
this is like
say,
sounding
like,
really bad. No. So no. So then, Photoshop. Like when I wake up in the morning, like I'll text Sheila, who's one of the researchers, photo researchers, and I'll say, "Oh, ask him this, do this, or get that," you know, and then I'll tell her, "Put my name on the folder." Because, you know, after the show was on for 2 years, we do have two other artists, Ellen and Heidi. I can't say Heidi's last name. I can't pronounce it properly.
Unkifer.
Okay.
I think I'm saying that.
And Ellen
I'm
Pack.
I'm scared to put an accent on it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do a German accent.
I'm trying really hard not to keep it as neutral, but it's like, but I want to say it right too. Unkifer.
Yes. But, like, everyone is very eager to work on the show and do the Photoshop. So when they start putting the stuff in the folders, those guys will grab stuff. And I'll always tell the researchers, put my name on the folder because I want to do that one.
So, I don't know if we're even allowed to talk about this, but like, there was this
probably not.
The Venn diagrams that Seth.
Like, oh, you want to? Well, we could talk about the one of my favorite things, and this goes back to working with Seth on Update, is when he sees a graphic and it's just so either totally wrong, or just crazy funny, but wrong, or just when it's so off and he's like, just what. The fudge was that. See, I didn't curse fudge. I said fudge. There was
that.
Like,
I do love that,
you though. Could tell your story of your Venn diagram.
I can tell?
Yeah, just
okay,
say.
So.
But this is, this is part of my belief is that I believe just go over the top and then have the writers bring it down.
I think I went with like over the top. Like there was
no,
an
but
over the top
I was sitting there and I was like, yeah, go
that's
over
right.
the.
You were complicit.
Yeah,
you
no, no, because I was like,
you
yeah,
were actively involved.
Make it super. It was boobs.
It was breasts. Yeah,
and they like did the Venn diagram and banged
it
together.
Together,
and
they
then
were, like,
they shook.
I mean,
and
did more than
when,
it was like.
Like when Seth saw in rehearsal, he was like, oh my
God.
Yeah, like, just, like it was so graphic.
He just, I remember, I'll never forget what he said. Like he just burst out laughing. He put his hand on the desk, his face was turning red. He said, why don't you just show full breast then?
I know.
Just like, you might as well.
But see, I have always said like, you know, I have like other, yeah. I can't say. Like there was something on.
Was it on SNL?
Yeah, on SNL, where I had to make something called, I had to do a graphic of something called a pocket clam. And I just was like, oh, I'll just go over the top. And the writer was like, and I was like younger at the time, and you know, I kind of look innocent. And the writer was like, could not believe I drew this. Like, he was like, what? And I said, well, it was better for me to go over the top and you tone it down.
See, that's why you're the person for the job.
No, but I was just thinking of all those instances when we have a graphic that Seth like just starts laughing at, or yeah. Well, for me, this goes back to SNL. He definitely will look over the graphic. I always try to look at his face to see, read
yeah,
it to
yeah.
see if he likes it or not, because you can kind of tell sometimes when he likes it or he doesn't like it.
Well, you speak Myers. I don't
but,
know his face.
But
like,
the back on the, I think the best one was back on Update. There was the researcher was Mike Drucker, and Mike Drucker's now like a famous Hollywood writer, comedy writer now. But he used to be our researcher on SNL, and I can't remember the joke, but he had to dress up in like a Star Trek outfit, and like we got the shirt from Costumes like extra small, so he had his like gut hanging out, and it was and he had like the Spock ears on, and we photoshopped. Mike Drucker into like a graveyard holding like a shovel, and the joke was about something about there's like a new Star Trek fan graveyard. I forget what the joke was, but Seth didn't see this till it went to dress, and you see him say the joke and then look out of the corner of his eye and he just sees Drucker and his gut hanging out in the Star Trek uniform, and if Seth had water in his mouth he would have taken a spit take, and then he couldn't go on, like he was like went to do the next joke and then started laughing again. So I always like when that happens. When that happens in our rehearsal, like on our show, there's like a few times for that. Like there, the one I'm thinking of is when I did the Jar Jar Binks that was supposed to like be a Karl Marx statue. He didn't laugh at that. He more was like, what the hell is that?
So what is that?
But that still made me laugh. But it made like the researchers who got the photos all worried. They're like, he's upset. I'm like, nah. We'll just fix it. But it makes me laugh when he, sometimes even when he doesn't like it. Well, no, because do you remember when we had the Gordon Fisherman?
You mean like when he's aghast?
No, but there was one time a joke for monologue that was like the Gordon Fisherman, and I must have misunderstood it. And it was like, I put the Gordon Fisherman, you know, on the fish sticks or whatever it's on, like in a noose around his head, and he was hanging. And I guess it was totally wrong, but I guess I didn't read the joke, and I think he just looked over and was like, what is that?
No, that is
and that still made me laugh, even though it was totally wrong, and I ruined the joke.
I just always, I told Seth that we try to get a rise out of him sometimes, and I, you know, he seems to appreciate it, like he tries to react. I think at this point he might be trying to react, and I just have to ask you, like, I don't know, how does he feel? Like, I can never read him.
No, I think you could. I mean, for me, I think just even like going back to Update, I could tell when he doesn't like the graphic from his face, and I could tell when he likes it, just from his face.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he, opposed to other people, like even going back doing over the shoulder graphics for other people, like some of them don't even look at the monitor at the graphics. Like Seth always looks at the monitor.
Yeah, I feel very naked,
graphics.
Honestly, when he's looking at our graphics.
But I think our best thing that we like is whenever we do popsicle stick, we like to look on the ISOS camera where you could see Seth watching the monitor, watching the popsicle sticks.
Oh, that's the best.
And you could see his reaction to it, like even in rehearsal, and we're like, does he like it? Does he not like it? Like the last time we were laughing because the, what was that? The not the Sound of Music. I'm like getting all my musicals.
Oh, you're talking about West Side Story.
Oh, West Side Story.
The best one.
Yeah, no, is that when it was so long and we could see on the ISIS camera trying to figure out what to do at the end.
He made like 50
like faces his we could see his brain working trying to come up with like what he's going to do at the end.
I've never seen him
and
like
that was fun.
That was amazing. I watched it like 10 times. But yeah, this is really fun that you know, we should do this every day. Can I do this every day? All right, cool. Well, I feel like we could probably go on forever. And this has been fun with the little time that we do get. And thanks for listening. This has been Late Night Chats with Manny and Tara.
And Tara.
And Tara.
Yes. And Tara.
Also Manny.
Maybe Tara.
Should we say? Yeah, you know that. That's my bad. That is Tara. That is correct. God, I'll never get out of that.
What do I care?
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.